I would now like to ask Mr. Enrico Camaranelli to come up to the podium and share it with Emmanuel, and I'll step off.
But obviously, if there are questions on the publication, I'm happy to answer the questions during the day. We'll have
plenty of opportunities
during the day.
My apologies. Thanks. And
so thank you, Enrico, for being with us. So let's move to the substance of this workshop. So before we dive into the specific sectors and specific use cases of how blockchain can impact international trade, I wanted to spend a few minutes discussing with Enrico and trying to dive deeper into the technology itself. What is Ready Blockchain? How does it work? What are the key features of the technology? You already heard some keywords that I had put on the screen as part of my presentation about what blockchain is. You heard from the DG that blockchain is much more than Bitcoin, even though the two are historically linked. Blockchain is the technology underpinning Bitcoin. But without further ado, so let me turn to Enrico, who is Senior Industry Research Analyst at IT Group. IT provides research and advisory services focused on business, technology, and regulatory issues and their impact on the financial services industry. Enrico's current research focuses on global transaction banking, supply chain finance, blockchain, and corporate treasury systems. So you're the perfect person to dive deeper into what blockchain is. So Enrico, one of the things that we hear very often when we hear about blockchain or in articles referring to blockchain is the question of trust. And the Economist called blockchain the trust machine. Can you tell us why?
Yes. First of all, thank you for the opportunity. And the reason why it's called trust is I like to make, I would say, a very simple example of how blockchain works. First of all, how many of the people here in the room ever heard about blockchain? Everybody, okay. How many of you would be able to explain blockchain to their grandmother? Okay, a good number, okay. Because the point is that I guess that the best way that I can answer your question is giving a simple example, which is the following. Let's say blockchain can be this room, okay? So this room can represent a blockchain. Why is this? Because I will not go into the details, but explain why it can be called like a trust machine. So let's assume that I have 100 euro, and I put this 100 euro in a safe, okay? The people here see that I have this 100 euro put into a safe. So you're all witnesses. Then I want to buy something. No, this is not the one. Then I want to buy something from Emmanuel. And so I'm going to say to Emmanuel, you know, I'm going to buy this, and I will pay you 100 euro that is in the safe. Now, we can be good friends, but Emmanuel might say, okay, but am I really sure you have that 100 euro? So what she does, she asks the people here, or let's say a special set of people, I will go to this a little bit later, and say, does Enrico have that 100 euro, or at least 100 euro in the safe? And the people have seen that I've done this, and they wrote on their book, on the registry, after discussing and say, did you see Enrico putting the money in the safe? Yes, yes. So they tell Emmanuel, Enrico has that money in the safe. So you can be certain, you know, that he has it. And so she sells me the good, and what I give to Emmanuel is not the money, is not the safe, but just the code of the safe on a piece of paper and pass it to her. And the people, again, those witnesses in the room that see this transaction, they will say, did you see Enrico passing the ticket to Emmanuel? Yes, yes, we concur. And then they write it on the page of this book. And Emmanuel has this ticket with a code up to open the safe, and she can decide whether she wants to cash in, so open the safe and take the money, or just change the code, because now it's hers. Now, if I want to, as it said, double spend, so I want to use that 100 euro, which is not mine anymore, to sell it to somebody else, I could promise, you know, I have the 100 euro, sell me the good. What will that person do? The person will ask to this set of witnesses, does Enrico have that 100 euro? And they will say, no, it's not in Enrico's possession anymore. So the point is that the second person who might be cheated by me will know, not from me, not from the central authority, not from the WTO, but from this group of witnesses, that I have or not possession of that of the, those go- that that amount of money. And if I want to bribe those witnesses because I want them to tell to lie to the second seller, I wouldn't know in advance of time who would be the person that the second seller would go and ask, does Enrico have the money? Because I don't know who, because there's so many. So the point is that without any central control, this system of trust is able to give the answer whether I have or not availability of that money, of the, whatever. I'm speaking about money, but it could be a certificate of authority, a bill of lading, a letter of credit, anything that is in my possession. So I hope that I've answered with this stupid example your question. But, okay.
Do you want to add something?
I just wanted to say, if I have to go into the technical piece, so taking the hash, how does this all happen?
Okay, that was going to be my next question.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Okay, good. So now, how does this happen? So how can this information be exchanged? Well, again, yes. If you go on the I have this document. So, and it says this is a paper document. How do I translate this into technology, and then me making able that, let's say, the people actually have certainty of the original document? Because can I click, or should I ask somebody to click for me? Okay, I will click. So what I do is that I pass this paper document into a scanner, so I digitize it. And then I process it through an algorithm, which is called a hashing algorithm, which has some very special characteristics. And you know, we don't have time now, but if anybody's interested in more details, I'm here, of course, happy to answer. So what happens is that any kind of document, could it be a paper document, could it be, as Emmanuel was saying before, a video, could it be a song, could be anything that is digital, you process it through this hashing algorithm. And what comes out is this fixed length of 256 bits or 64 characters. So whatever the length, it could be the Encyclopedia Britannica, it will always have a string of 64 characters. And this is the digital footprint of this document. There's no way that from this digest, this is the sequence of characters, you can go back to the original. But the most important thing is that if I take another document and change, even in this case, you know, the document says you owe me 50, the digest will be completely different. So this allows anybody who doesn't know the two parties that if the first document was put into the blockchain, so in this special database, said you owe me $100, anybody who comes later and says the document is 50 will have to just match the two digests, and you can see the difference.
Thank you very much, Enrico. Now, one term that is very often used in relation to blockchain is node, and I'm not sure everyone in the room knows that. So yeah. Would you be able to actually explain what a node is?
Yes, the node is, in my example of the people in the room, everybody would be a node, so a component of this network. And so you have, and let's say when I was speaking before of those special nodes, those special nodes are called, sometimes are called miners, sometimes are called validators. And depending on how many and how they participate in the network, you can basically distinguish between a permissioned or private blockchain or a permissionless or public blockchain. What a node is basically a couple of private keys, pair of keys, a private and a public key, because what ensures all this security, all this certainty is very complex cryptographic algorithms. Again, don't have time here to explain it, but this is what a node is, basically. It's like having the public key is like your email address, and the private key is like your password. The public key, everybody knows it, but nobody would know your password.
Thank you. Now, we were talking about hashing. One specific feature of the technology is the fact that the transactions, so the blocks, are linked to each other using a hash pointer. Can you tell us more about the importance of this in terms of traceability, for example?
With pleasure. The reason why it's called blockchain is because it's a chain of blocks. So in my example before of the people writing on their registry, consider every page of this registry like a block. So a block is a set of information. Now, the very important thing is that these blocks or these pages are connected one with another. So if you take a registry and you basically tear a page, you create sort of a disconnect. And it's not so easy that you just replace one page with another one. And how hashing allows this, though, I'm going a little bit more in the details, technical details, but there's no way that it can be, even my grandmother could not understand this if I would not explain it through, and she didn't understand it, of course. But so traceability, let's assume that we have these blocks. Consider each block like a page of this registry, and everyone has the same copy of that registry. This is very important. This is why it's called distributed ledger, because the ledger is like a book, and everybody has a copy of it. And everybody, every time this registry is updated, everybody has a copy. Now, what you do is that of all this series of concatenated blocks, you create a hash. You see they have the digest. And then when a new block, solely when a new page is written, what happens to concatenate this page with the previous ones is that you make a hash of this block. You make a hash of the previous block, and then you hash it again. Okay? So now, in block n minus 1, you have the hash of the previous set of blocks. And this happens continuously. Why is this important? And this is the real importance of why you want to have a blockchain. Because if you have a very good hacker that goes and overwrites, that was 60, and they say, no, and now it's 40. If you do this, what happens in a normal database, a very good hacker would do it. Eventually, you would discover that there's something wrong, but you will never be able to, I mean, you will be able to go back, but only if somebody notices this. Now, how does, instead, blockchain prevent a good hacker to do this? Is because if you change that number, what happens is that the hash of the whole entire thing changes. And this means that if you want the entire database, so the entire book to be rewritten with that 40, you have to write all the subsequent pages. And while you're trying to do this, you are one against the multitude of the miners or the validators who are keeping on writing their own blocks and their own books. So traceability in this case is guaranteed, because if somebody tries to tamper with the system, they have to rewrite the whole history. Now, this does not mean that you cannot make mistakes. If you make a mistake, you just write the correction in the new block, and you will never overwrite. You will never cancel the mistake. So this is why, while blockchain cannot prevent fraud, if you want to be fraudulent, you can write something mistaken, but you can trace back who has made that fraud intentionally. If it was a mistake, let's say a honest mistake, no problem, but you still can keep track of that.
Thank you. And maybe just to add, here we've been talking about blocks, but there are other distributed ledger technologies that do not combine transactions in blocks. Nevertheless, you always have this link between the different transactions. Sometimes it may not be linear. In the case of IOTA, it's more like a tangle. But you always have this link that allows for traceability. This is a feature that is very important to track the different the different transactions, and that is very very much used in international trade.
And what is very important is that everybody has a copy of this. So even if you try and change your own, let's say, block or your own, let's say, registry, you have to make sure that copy, changed copy, is the same that everybody else has. And why should the others, you know, change just because you did it?
We don't have a lot of time, but let me ask maybe two questions to finish. You referred to public versus private blockchains, permissionless versus permission. Can you say, just in a few words, what the difference is?
The main difference, again, is considering the example of the payment before. If those notaries, those virtual notaries, those who validate the transaction, are just entities that participate just because they want to, of course, get compensated, for this work, but they also need to have energies. They need to spend some time because they need to be there and write every time this transaction. In that case, they participate, so they get into this room and they start doing their job. And so in this case, it would be a public and permissionless environment. If instead this room says whoever wants to do this job needs to be approved by us, then in that case it's a permissioned blockchain, and therefore it's private because not everybody can get in and get out. They need to have a permission.
Thank you. And very last question. One thing that is very often used with blockchains are smart contracts. I already referred to them very briefly in my presentation. Can you tell us what smart contracts are and give us maybe a concrete example of a smart contract?
A smart contract is, how can I make an example? The example, do I have an animation for this? No, I thought I had it. The smart contract, an example in the trade world is, you are my supplier. If I receive goods from you and I check, inspect these goods and these goods are approved, then I'm going to approve your invoice. So I'm going to pay you. So all this if, then, else, all these conditions can be coded into a program and they can be put on blockchain. So this contract that we have established is not something between you and I, but it's something that now is solid rock in the blockchain. The important thing is that when an event, typically an event in the physical supply chain, so the goods arrive and there is an inspection, that particular event, which is basically part of this contract, triggers the execution of the contract. So when the goods arrive and they are quality inspectioned, then nobody can stop the payment. So that's why the smart contracts are very powerful, but also, let's say, very potentially dangerous. And so this is why for the execution, again, you need all these different validators, all these miners. They all run the same contract when the event happens to see if the outcome is the same. And if so, they concur, it is okay, and then the contract is executed.
Thank you very much, Enrico, for these useful explanations. Now, we unfortunately don't have more time to dive deeper into the technology, but I hope that these explanations have given you a basic understanding of how the technology works and what the key features are. And I would now suggest that we move to session one, which focuses on trade finance. And so I would like to invite our speaker. So, Enrico, you stay here for this session. Yes.
Oh, yes.
And so I would like to invite Michel Chibunga, Agnès Hugo, and Mark van der Molen to come to the podium.
And by the way, I hope now that you are able to explain to your grandmother what blockchain is.